Welcome to the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network.
Hello again, Intelligentsia. John Jeffers here on the Jeffers Brief, only on Contra Radio Network. We got a lot to get to today. Now. Glad you're here. I really am. The other day, I was walking the dog, and I was thinking to myself, well, first of all, came upon what looked, because the person was, nobody's around, but it appeared that somebody was homeless, left all the worldly possessions on the side of the road in a train station parking lot. And the dog and I walked by, and I'm looking, and I'm thinking, okay, I get it. I think I know what's going on here. But the homeless person was nowhere to be found. And I'm thinking, kind of unusual, because this is all the worldly possessions, as far as I could see. Regardless, so I'm walking the dog, and I'm thinking to myself, hey, look, why don't you talk to your listeners about this scenario? Don't ask me how it came to me, it just did. But anyways, so the scenario is this. You're walking on the street, minding your own business, and a person comes up with a knife. And they tell you, you know, demand of you, your valuables they're going to take from you by force. Or threat of the use of force under the guise of great bodily harm and or death if you do not comply with their demand. So I'm thinking to myself, what would I do? This is me. First thing is, I'm backing up. Because when somebody has a knife, and I want you to understand something, let's add this to the mix. You don't have your firearm, you don't have a weapon that you can grab. If you're going to go to combat, it's going to be empty-handed techniques you're going to be used. Yes? Okay. So, what I want to do is this. I'm going to fix that. That's better. So, I myself am backing up, and then I'm going to start laying the groundwork for a legal defense. How do you do that? Because the bottom line is this. You got all this stuff going on. You must, I can't stress it enough. You must keep your emotions in check. Because if you let your emotions take over, then the issue you're going to have is this. You can't think. Your intellectual reasoning plummets. Your emotions rise. You make mistakes. You get injured. You get hurt. And or killed. So, how do we do this? Okay, this is how I would. So, while I'm backing up, I am yelling in my best drill sergeant voice so God and everybody around me can hear. And I'm telling this person, stop, get back, stop, get back, no. And the reason we're laying the groundwork for your legal defense is this. If by somehow, in the way things are lately, you come across an overzealous prosecutor, you might be able to find a witness from somebody who heard you yelling, stop, get back, no, telling this assailant, stop, get back, no, whatever you got to do. So now you're laying the groundwork. Now the person who's attacking you isn't thinking that way. He's only concentrating on one thing, that you meet his unconditional demands. And the demands are this. You may give up your wallet, your watch, your money, your purse, whatever, car keys, whatever. And that's no. No guarantee that no harm will come to you. You follow me? Dig? Yes? All right. So, what to do next. If you are a prepper, if you are a patriot, and ladies, this applies especially to you. I am so sick and tired of seeing, this is going to sound really bad, but I don't know how else to put it. I keep seeing stories in the media about white girls getting the shit knocked out of them at school. We're talking maiming and or death, brain injury, traumatic brain injury. I blame the parents of both the little bastards. And this is why. I taught my daughter self-defense techniques. As a prepper and a patriot, you should be enrolled in a school or a class or classes that deal and will teach you empty-handed defense techniques, martial arts. Look, you don't have to know how to attack someone, but you do need to know how to defend yourself and neutralize a threat should a threat appear on, you know, in front of you. Now, you could say, well, if he's got a knife, I'm going to draw my gun. Well, you could. However, and you can back check me on this, I defy you to do it. If an assailant is within, who has a knife, is threatening to attack, is within 21 feet of you, they can attack you with that knife before you have a chance to clear leather, to clear and get your firearm out and on target and round fired. And I know because I trained with this. I know what happens. The only way to defeat it is a backwards L movement. That's the only way to defeat it. You buy space, you buy time. Time is something measured in milliseconds and seconds that you're going to need to bring your weapon out and put it on target and get at least one round off and hitting the target successfully to neutralize the threat. You may not have that. So, if he's within 21 feet, unless you've practiced and you know how to defeat a knife-armed attacker, you're going to have to go hands-on. Okay, so the decision's been made. You go hands-on. Mentally, I want you to be prepared to be cut or stabbed, period. Because when people see knives, we as human beings have a natural fear. It's like seeing a dog, a bad dog. People have a natural fear of being bit by a dog, as they should. People have a natural fear of being cut with or stabbed with a knife. Don't believe me? How many times have you been in the kitchen cutting up something and you silently say to yourself, pay attention to what you're doing. Don't cut yourself. Don't get cut. Or you say it to your spouse who might be, you know, chopping up vegetables or whatnot. Be careful what you're doing. Why? Because we have a natural tendency. Because we know knife wounds are nasty and they're just, ugh. So, knowing this, they're counting on you that if you do attack it, but you get cut or stabbed, the shock of it is enough to make you back off and submit to their will. Now, here's something else I want you to understand, my friends. And this is a fine point. I am not giving you legal advice. What I'm going to tell you is this. If a person comes at me with a knife, he has made his intention known. He is going to harm me, do me great bodily harm, and or kill me. I, on the other hand, have a natural right to self-defense, and therefore I will kill them. How you do it and when you do it is something you're going to have to judge for yourself. It's only a decision you can make. Because the bottom line is this, you're going to have to answer for it eventually. For example, let's say you go hands-on and you are victoriously successful. Say you disarm him, but as he takes off, you chase him down and you knife him. Could you very possibly be charged with a crime? My answer is yes, you could. Because it's a fine legal point. From the time that his attack stopped and your attack began. Now, if he's killed with holding his knife and you guys are in a struggle and he gets killed, oh well. Now, does that exempt you from a civil suit? No, it will not. And you can bet your bottom dollar somewhere down the line, the defense, someone will say, well, he had mental problems and he was off his meds. You know what? I don't give a flying fuck. Get back. If you have somebody like this in your family and they're prone to violence, you have a couple options available to you, in my opinion. One, make sure they stay on their meds. Two, if they're violent and whatnot, you have a responsibility to society to ensure that that person is not out and about. You do not have the right to go sue somebody because your family member, who's a mental subject and was dealing with mental issues, does not give you a right to sit there and cash in on your family member's death. That's their problem. That's your fault for letting it happen. Now, you don't have to take responsibility for your family member. I mean, there are times when you have to wash your hands of the whole situation and say, I've done what I can. I can't do anymore. Am I my brother's keeper? To a point. But if my brother won't or cannot or will not follow, listen, or do what's best for them, you got to wash your hands. Walk away. Say, all right, I've done what I can. So, same thing. So, the point is this. If you're in the middle of attack, you disarm him, he takes off, you, and let's say you get your gun out, you cap him in the back. Bad optics. Bad optics. What if you capped him in the back and you're in the middle of a struggle, you just happen to finally either get the knife out, disarm him, and you plunge it in his heart and you drop him dead there, or somehow you're able to free an arm, your hand, and get a round off from your firearm. Too bad. But if he is fleeing you, you must stop your attack. And I'm telling you this not morally, because we all know dirtbags are going to go out and victimize somebody else, but to protect you legally. All right? So, ladies, please, by all means, enroll. Look, if you take the time to go out and have girls' night out, if you take the time to have, you know, I'm going to stay at home tonight and watch TV, then you have time to, well, educate yourself to help prepare yourself to protect yourself. Look, there are a lot of dirtbags out there. And a lot of them, well, a lot of them need killing. Because when you have a cancer, you're afflicted with cancer. You don't leave it in your body. You cut it out. You irradiate it. You do whatever you got to do to get rid of that cancer. The same is true. Some people are a cancer on society, and therefore they cannot be a part of society. If they choose to do that, we as a society as a whole, we need to say, uh-uh. No, you don't play well, get along well with others. Their moral compass is broken. Pedophiles, prime example. Moral compass is broken. It cannot be fixed. Cannot be rehabilitated. Do not buy the liberal bullshit. The only thing that happens when pedophiles get out of prison is this. They will go out and they will reoffend again. Because society has chosen, mind you, to not deal with this problem once and for all and has chosen to victimize another child. Somebody else's child. I made it my decision a long time ago with my daughter. And I told my ex-wife this, her mother, and I told my current wife this, that if anything like that happened to my daughter, I will be going to prison because I will find that person and I will kill them. If I have to get them in the courtroom, I will kill them there. I don't care. Because it's bad enough you got my daughter, you will not get another child, period. Done, end of conversation. So, but that was a parent speaking. So, all right. Well, it's true, guys. I don't know what else to tell you here. What else I got coming up here? I got, yes. Hold on. Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Hold on. I got to get this. See if it works this. Yesterday, I taped this show. computer crashed. What a cluster. I was literally 2 minutes from ending the episode. No, computer says, you're done now. Wiped out everything. So, yeah. So, we're going to try it again, see if we can get this to work.
From the DMZ to the NATO front, this is Contra Radio Network.
Indeed it is. Welcome, welcome. Global audience, yes. Hey guys, I want you to know something here. There's a couple things that we have to talk about. One is the Fannie Willis case there in Georgia with Trump. And this is, I believe, is true. Now, yesterday 6 counts were dismissed by the court. I don't remember how many counts that Trump is charged with in Georgia. But anyways, so I don't know how many that leaves. But I'm thinking to myself, okay, I see how this is going to play out. I think it may play out this way. The judge will dismiss some of the counts, but then keep others because he's too afraid to do anything. He's too afraid to do anything. And apparently I'm not the one that thinks so. In the Federalist, Eddie Scarry, he wrote this. It's great. Came out yesterday. Judge Scott McAfee has let this ridiculous Fulton County prosecution of Donald Trump go on this long, and it doesn't look like he'll stop it now. So before the end of the week, we're supposed to know whether Georgia Democrat District Attorney Fannie Willis's ridiculous street gang persecution of Donald Trump and associates will be killed off before it goes to trial. But for that to happen, it's going to take an extraordinary act of bravery from Judge Scott McAfee, and well, the record so far that he's not exactly Rambo in a robe. So McAfee's self-imposed the Friday deadline for his decision on the defense team's move to disqualify Willis. They accuse her of self-dealing by hiring her then-boyfriend to join her office's Get Trump persecution at a salary earning him and thus her hundreds of thousands of Georgia taxpayer dollars. Willis denies the allegation, although the evidence that she was in a relationship with Nathan Wood at the time she recruited him as special counsel, an otherwise inexplicable choice, given that he's a defense attorney and not a prosecutor, is overwhelming. To make the Jerry Springer affair all the more entertaining, in defending herself, Willis claimed to keep alarming amounts of cash on hand, which she used to reimburse Wade for several lavish vacations they took together in recent months. So if cash was the game, there's no one to blame. It's been a comically sleazy display straight out of a Madea movie. But in all likelihood, if McAfee has let this freak show come this far, there's no reason to think he's ready to shut it down now. A serious judge under normal circumstances would have dismissed this patently absurd case from the beginning. Trump and associates of his 2020 campaign supposedly committed severe crimes by exploring multiple avenues in Georgia that they had hoped in vain might secure the candidate and electoral victory in the state. That included conversations with the elected officials, including state representatives and the state secretary, wherein Trump and his team made their case that they had, in fact, won Georgia's vote count. None of it worked because the evidence wasn't there to support the case. This is the otherwise known as the right of the people to petition the government, a constitutionally guaranteed freedom that, yes, even Trump and his supporters are entitled to. Americans can't be stopped from challenging government workers to correct alleged wrongs, whatever they may be or may not be. And apparently Willis doesn't think so, and she was able to convince the grand jury from a pool of voters that went nearly 75% for Biden that she's right. Tough sell, but she did it. As for McAfee, the limited extent of his fortitude was further revealed when he allowed Willis to put on a berserk performance in her own hearing before she was even asked to testify. In it, she shouted at the defense attorneys, called them liars, and then used her race as a shield against all scrutiny. That's right, she played the race card. The entire ordeal has cheapened the criminal justice system, and McAfee has sat on his bench watching it happen like a mute Elmer Fudd. you almost can't blame him. Not only is he up for re-election, facing a Jesse Jackson anointed opponent, but he knows just as well as everyone else that shaking down Trump, Democrats ain't playing. Any attempt by McAfee to check Willis, whom he supported in her election, will be invariably characterized by all Democrats and their media friends as an act of white supremacy, a move to thwart a powerful black woman of color holding Trump accountable. The attacks on his reputation would be withering and relentless. In his ruling on the Willis hearings, he will likely acknowledge her obvious deception of the court, but ultimately will conclude it doesn't change the underlying case against the former president and his associates. It takes a lot to stand in front of the Get Trump train, and it doesn't look like McAfee has much of anything. Eddie Scari is a D.C. columnist at The Federalist and author of the book Liberal Misery, How the Hateful Left Sucks the Joy Out of Everything and Everyone. You know, I think I'm going to go buy that book just because I like the title that much. Well, it's true. Now, what else was I looking at that had me? Okay, this is also coming across from ABC News like an hour ago. Former President Trump is in a Florida courtroom where his attorneys are arguing for the dismissal of his federal classified documents case. Special Counsel Jack Smith, who brought the charges against Trump, is also in attendance. U.S. District Judge Eileen Cannon began the hearing without making any mention of the case's trial date and instead directed the defense lawyers to begin arguing their motion to dismiss based on unconditional vagueness. This is interesting. These charges must be struck and dismissed, defense lawyer Emil Bove argued. Bove suggested that Trump is a victim of a double standard compared to other presidents who allegedly retained sensitive information, directly mentioning the conduct of Presidents Clinton, Reagan, and Biden. Cannon responded to the defense argument with skepticism, at one point suggesting the defense motion was premature, and peppered Bove with questions about definitions and hypotheticals of Trump's conduct. When does it become unauthorized, Cannon asked, and that's a great question. President Trump designated the records as personal when he took them out of the White House, Bove said. What is your definition of unauthorized, Cannon later asked. Bove responded, Judge, I don't have one, and that is why the statute is unconstitutionally vague applied to President Trump, Bove said. Cannon had scheduled a hearing in Fort Pierce, Florida, to consider two of Trump's motions to dismiss the case based on Trump's attorney's claim of Smith's unconstitutionally vague use of the Espionage Act and his application of the Presidential Records Act. In response, Smith had argued that the former president's motion to dismiss the case are yet another example of Trump believing he is above the law. Well, if I can believe I'm the King of England, doesn't mean I'm a criminal and should be subject to a lawsuit now, does it? Trump's claims rest on three fundamental errors, all of which reflect his view that, as a former president, the nation's laws and principles of accountability that govern every other citizen do not apply to him. Prosecutors wrote in a filing responding to Trump's motion to dismiss based on the Presidential Records Act. In addition to Trump, his co-defense in the case aide Walt Nauta and Mar-a-Lago property manager Carlos de Oliveira were expected to attend the hearing. The full day hearing comes one day after a Georgia judge dismissed six counts of the sprawling election interference case against Trump and 18 co-defendants, including three counts against the former president himself. The ruling leaves Trump still facing 10 counts in Georgia where he and other defendants pleaded not guilty to all charges last August. Four of Trump's co-defendants subsequently took plea deals in exchange for agreeing to testify against other defendants in that case. So, there you have it. All right, Well, I'd like to, you know, put it out there, guys. What else we have here today? Oh, yes. No, we can't. I can't do that for them. I won't do it for them. No, 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 no. There we go.
This is the Contra Radio Network. CRN for all the right reasons.
That's right. All the right reasons, not the left reasons. Here's something interesting I found also I wanted to share with you from American Thinker. First, let me take a break. Tea. Love tea. How delicious is that? The American Thinker wrote something interesting I wanted to share with you. And I want you to think about it. And I just wanted to bring it up here because I think it's kind of interesting. The American Thinker, written by Robert Arve, is called Maybe They Really Are Nazis After All. Written March 13th, 2024, again by Robert Arve. Excellent, by the way. In the 1930s, when Hitler was rising to power, there were some Germans who correctly foresaw that the end result would be catastrophe for Europe and for the German people, as well as for Jews and others. They attempted to persuade their fellow Germans to oppose the impending dictatorship, as historically, tragically, history shows, but to no avail. Anecdotes include that of a man who escaped Germany with only one suitcase, planning to return in a few days after people who supported Hitler regained their sanity and ousted him. Another concerns a man who eventually gave in to his son's persistent request to be permitted to join the Nazi Party. He felt that by doing so, his son would at least avoid persecution by the brown-shirted minions of the regime. In doing so, he handed his son over to doom. It is questionable whether father or son survived the resulting war, the war that skeletonized Berlin and left its people starving, entirely reliant on the mercies of those whom they had until then tormented. Key to all this in the 1930s was the false perception, renewed each day, that the Nazi government had gotten so bad that matters could not possibly get any worse. They just had to turn around and get back to normal, civilized society, after all. Just how bad could things get? Could they possibly lead to a worldwide war? Japan's Pacific ambitions relied heavily on and were encouraged by the expectation that Germany would defeat the British Empire and thereby expel it from Asia. And the idea of millions dying in death camps seemed preposterous in 1933. Only barbarians could enact such a policy. Surely civilized Germany could never, ever do such a thing. So, is it fair to compare modern America to the Germany of the era of 1933 to 1945? Decide for yourself. In America, the so-called free speech movement of the 1960s quickly morphed into the practice of censorship by shouting down speakers with whom the left disagrees. It's a practice which they continue to this very day. How far can that get? Racial civil rights, it's a good thing, eventually was deceptively adapted to women's rights, gay rights, animal rights. Women's rights became the right to kill millions of unborn children. Racial civil rights became the debilitations of multi-generational welfare for life. The perpetually unemployed. Add to all these the right of criminals, even murderers, to be released without punishment. Okay, no farther. But farther there is and there was. The right of gays to be left alone. And then to marry each other. Eventually, became the right of homosexual advocates to teach small children the sexual practices of sodomy. Now, this can't be true. No one could have foreseen that a president of the United States, abetted by the entire Democrat Party and the courts, would use taxpayer money to bring children to sex change clinics to mutilate them, to permanently destroy their ability to grow into their natural sex. One would have been deemed insane to predict such a thing. So we have in the Oval Office President Roomba, an increasingly senile puppet whose handlers not only permit millions of illegal aliens to flood our nation, swelling our census with future representatives who would represent them, not us, and not only permit, but actually pay for their lawless border crossing with our tax dollars. We now have in Congress people who openly acquiesce to foreign powers sworn to destroy America. By the way, reported today, Biden's going to give a shitload of money, $10 million, to Iran. Not making it up. I'm not that smart to make that up. We have corporate boards of directors who despise the ordinary hardworking citizen and who openly sneer at our flag and ridicule the idea of selfless patriotism. The rot has so deeply infested our nation that at least one congressman has admitted that there is no normal procedure or way to set things right. We used to trust that election officials would not rig elections. For decades, the question has been asked, when will Americans wake up? They have yet to do so. And the nightmare not only continues, but gets worse. Just as in 1933 Germany, anti-Semitism has become a dreadful fact of the political scene, especially on American college campuses. And how far will it go? Unlike in the 20th century, Germany, there are a few people in power who recognize and oppose the present trend toward an American tyranny. Governor Abbott of Texas is one. And he has the explicit support of 25 other governors. Good job. We have a tradition of independence, of private weapons ownership, and of refusing to be silenced. Will these few citizens and governors be enough? Or will we sink into the mire that swallowed the mighty epitome of civilization that Germany once had been? There will be no one to come to our aid. Only foreign armies to trample us. Will we allow our children to be enslaved? And as President Reagan once said, there are no easy choices, but there are simple ones. There you have it. There it is. Some time ago, I talked to you about something called ranked choice voting. What a scam! And it should be unconstitutional, period. Because it takes away the constitutional, I believe it is the Constitution, that puts out one man, one vote. Yes, one person, one vote. This is from the Foundation for Government Accountability. And this is an explainer video. This is why ranked choice voting is so bad. So listen up, take notes. Here we go.
Would you still head to the polls if you knew that your vote was just going to get thrown in the trash? Of course not. Which is exactly why you need to know the truth about ranked choice voting. Also known as instant runoff voting, ranked choice voting destroys everything we know about free and fair elections. Unlike a traditional election, each voter is expected to vote for every listed candidate in order of preference. Also unlike a traditional election where the candidate with the most votes wins, a candidate must have a majority of votes to win. If there's no majority winner in the first round, the losing candidate is eliminated. The people who voted for the loser in the first round then have their second choice votes counted in the next round. This process continues until there is finally a majority winner. The problem is that thousands of votes are trashed along the way to create this supposed majority. These voters weren't willing to vote against their conscience, so their votes are gone. These voters got confused and filled out their ballots incorrectly, so their votes are gone too. And these folks ended up casting votes for candidates they never would have voted for otherwise. The result is that a much smaller manufactured pool of voters ultimately decides the election, to the exclusion of thousands of other voters. Any system that throws out legitimate votes and requires voters to vote against their conscience is problem enough. But ranked choice voting almost always ends in extreme partisan victory for the left. It's a far cry from the ideal that gives every voter a voice and a vote that matters. This scheme undermines the integrity of our elections, and it must be rejected.
Yes. Just so, in case you don't know, allow me to edify you with these numbers. I know you're going to flip out when I tell you what it is. Oh, where is it? According to research from the Foundation for Government Accountability, the state of Maine threw out 8,000 votes in 2018. New York City tossed out 140,000 votes in its 2021 primary, and Alaska tossed out 15,000 votes in 2022. So when the Democrats start screwing about voter disenfranchisement and voter suppression, just bring it up. Ranked choice voting does exactly that. Well, it's true. I don't make it up. Professor Turley says Democrats are working to disqualify dozens of Republicans beyond Trump. Daily Caller here. Nicole Silverio wrote this. Very good. Democrat Maryland Representative Jamie Raskin. By the way, when I see Raskin, he makes my skin crawl. Sir, go to any dollar store. It's called shampoo. Please use it. You slimy thing, you. Said congressional Democrats are planning legislation to disqualify Trump under Section 3 of the 14th Amendment, which states no person is permitted to hold office if they have engaged in insurrection or rebellion against the same, or given aid or comfort to the enemies thereof. The Supreme Court's unanimous ruling stated that Colorado could not disqualify Trump from the ballot. Well, they said that because they said states cannot sit there and disqualify who can run for federal office and who can't. Well, anything is possible because the Supreme Court expressly said that the public should not have to deal with or tolerate this level of chaos in an election. And essentially, Representative Raskin said, oh, yes, they do, Turley said. He basically came back and said, we're going to move this over to Congress. Keep in mind that the prior legislation the Democrats have put forward that are referenced by Raskin sought not just to disqualify Trump. Many of those members were seeking to disqualify dozens of their colleagues, other Republicans off ballots to cleanse the ballots of these Republican incumbents. So this is a direct assault on what most of us view as Democratic values, but, you know, they're going to have to thread that needle, and I think they could trip more legal problems, he continued. So Raskin vowed to reintroduce a bill that would declare January 6, 2021 an insurrection and a national holiday for the Democrats. No, I made that last part up. And that those involved engage in insurrection. Yes, because insurrection over the U.S. government took place without firearms, explosives, any type of organized military force. Insurrection. Yeah. It truly said that while the U.S. Constitution hands Congress the power to enforce the insurrectionist ban of the 14th Amendment. He said Raskin and his colleagues were attempting to preserve chaos at all costs, and that is true. The court ruled that the removal of candidates from state ballots could create a patchwork of outcomes, leading to an evolving electoral map that could dramatically change the behavior of voters, parties, and states across the country in different ways and at different times. The case addressed a decision by, of course, the Colorado Supreme Court in late December to disqualify Trump from the ballot due to the former president allegedly engaging in the January 6, 21 Capitol riot. Maine and Illinois filed suit with Colorado, though the Supreme Court's decision immediately overruled those states' decisions. Oh, too bad. Here, this is Professor Turley right here on Fox News. Here, listen up.
This is Congressman Jamie Raskin taking what the Supreme Court suggested and running with it, that if you're going to disqualify somebody under the 14th Amendment, Congress is the only one that's got the power to do that. He is writing up legislation, which is going to go nowhere. But here's what you wrote about it. You said Democrats rushed to keep Trump off ballot after SCOTUS decision because election can't be left to voters. Tongue firmly in cheek there. It appears that the last thing Democrats want is for the unanimous decision to actually lead to an outbreak of democracy, where the court expressly warned of chaos in elections. Raskin and others appear eager to be agents of chaos in Congress. So two things here. So obviously this plays well politically for Raskin, even though it's not going to go anywhere. But our Kerry Urban is suggesting that maybe if Trump were to win the election, and Democrats were to regain control of Congress, there might actually be a post-election push to disqualify Trump as president under the 14th Amendment.
Well, anything is possible, because you have a court say, the Supreme Court expressly said that the public should not have to deal or tolerate this level of chaos in an election. And essentially, Representative Raskin said, oh, yes, they do. I mean, he basically came back and said, we're going to move this over to Congress. Keep in mind that the prior legislation that the Democrats have put forward that are referenced by Raskin sought not just to disqualify Trump. Many of those members were seeking to disqualify dozens of their colleagues, other Republicans off ballots, to cleanse ballots of these Republican incumbents. So this is a direct assault on what most of us view as democratic values. But, you know, they're going to have to thread that needle, and I think they could trip more legal problems. Yes, this belongs, this rests with Congress. The Constitution says that. But you have to do it right. And they seem to be in a rush just to preserve chaos at all costs.
Seems to me, too, that a lot of people would think that if you want a clean house in Congress, the best way to do it is to let the voters decide. And that's something that cuts both ways. Jonathan, great to see you.
There's a novel idea you got.
There you go. All right, my friends. Do I have anything else? Yes. Pennsylvania partners with DHS and CISA censors to target election speech it deems a threat. Well, does it? I don't know.
The Jeffers Brief, the Two Crazy Guys, the Conservative Underground, and Preppy 2.0. Listen to all of your favorite programs on the Contra Radio Network, www.contraradionetwork.com. Log on now.
All right, before we left, talking about another Federalist article, because we can't have a threat. I want you to know something. I want you to pay attention to people. When people sit there and they, especially these supposed experts, these supposed knuckleheads that go out there, they, oh, we are a democracy. You've got to preserve democracy. First of all, know this. We don't live in a democracy. I don't know how many times you've got to be told. Why do these people continue to say this? It just shows their ignorance. And it also gives away the fact that they've been reading talking points. Yes, they have. We live in a representative constitutional republic. Oh, it deems a threat. Pennsylvania, shame on you. Is Pennsylvania's partnering with the nerve center of the censorship efforts the federal government has weaponized against Americans? Democrat Governor Josh Shapiro announced Thursday the state would partner with state and federal agencies, including Homeland Security, to mitigate threats to elections such as its speech it deems misinformation. The Pennsylvania State Department separately revealed to the Federalist that the task force's cooperation with DHS would include continuing to work closely with the Cybersecurity and Infrastructure Security Agency, CISA. And they will coordinate plans to mitigate threats to the election process, protect voters from intimidation, unless, of course, it's from the left, and provide voters with accurate, trusted election information as long as the Democrats win. Well, there you go. That's it. All right. Anyways, hey, I want to say thanks for listening to the Contra Radio Network. Thanks for listening to me. I appreciate it. Taking some time out of your day. Until next time, I am John Jeffers here on the Contra Radio Network. Thank you for listening or watching, depending on how you're doing.